Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Circuses on the air.
The president does it.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John, I've been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in 6 seasons, it's one ball team. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time, and the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning to you, Dave.
How you doing, pal?
Doing well.
The big race is on.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And even though I'm doing well, it was a challenge out there.
And we're talking about Mackinac, of course.
Yes, the Mackinac race. And my heart goes out to the family of the person who is missing at this point.
That's tragic.
Also,
how tragic
also,
is that?
Also, to the crew of the boat, because as we were talking off the air, crews work so closely together. It's a band of, I want to say, humanity, because it's men and women on board ship now. And
there's risks. I mean, obviously there's risks to this race, but you know, you work so hard for this, and it's really for fun. I mean, this is an adventure, and then to have something so tragic happen.
Yes, yeah, and at any time, but you know, right here at the get-go, at the start. You know, this is a situation where it's not the first time things like this have happened, but you never want it to happen. And being out there yesterday, I can tell you that was some of the roughest water I've ever been on. And we were watching some of the boats, and pretty good-sized boats.
Yeah.
Already, those crews were working to just keep things.
Well, I've been following you on Facebook, and you've been very clear about that happening. And Roger mentioned that the search is now kind of changed to, obviously, a rescue effort.
Recovery. And obviously because of night, you know, it's impossible, especially out there. And even this close to the city, you don't have to go too far out. It's pitch black out there.
Yeah.
And then 6 to 8 foot waves on top of this.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and the weather we're going to be getting. I mean, there are some storms coming through this morning. That's not going to help,
either. And storms northward also. So this is a rough year for the Mack race.
Yeah. When was it? Was it 4 years ago? You really immersed yourself in this whole week. Actually, we're going to use one of your photos for the podcast, one of your favorite photos, which is that one of that silhouette.
Oh, the sunrise.
Oh, the sunrise.
Yes. Oh, thanks, Dave.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful
shot.
I
waited all night for that, almost literally.
But that was 4 years. 4 years ago.
4 years ago this month. Yeah. This week?
Quite an adventure.
Week? Yeah. Well, I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
It isn't easy. Even though we had such very calm weather by comparison, too calm because we couldn't find some wind at some point. But, there are times when you can't see land.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how big this lake is and how wide it is. And when there is no wind, you're looking for wind. And we left at 3 o'clock that Friday afternoon and crossed the finish line at 3 a.m. the following Monday.
Well, how long have they been doing this race?
This is the 110th run of it.
Wow.
Now, there were a couple of years since it started in the very late 1890s. There were a couple of years for a variety of reasons where it didn't happen.
I remember that. Yeah.
But this year is the 110th running.
That's amazing. And what's the big prize? Like, you make it through.
Well, you get a trophy.
Yeah.
I don't know about money, although there is corporate sponsorship involved with this.
Isn't there Kilwins out there? Isn't there some?
Oh,
don't you get
yes,
some ice cream, maybe?
Is.
Maybe ice cream has to be part of this deal.
Oh, the island is a magical place, even yeah. though it's packed with people after race day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just a magical place to be. And the island is very busy because you not only have the Chicago to Mackinac race, you have the Port Huron to Mackinac race,
okay.
which leaves from Port Huron in Michigan and goes up Lake Huron to the island.
Wow, that's cool. Beautiful.
Some people do both.
Yeah, that's wild. That's quite an adventure, though.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're prepping almost all year for this. I mean, really.
Well,
right?
as soon as the season starts, sure. Yeah. And, you know, when the season goes away, you know, in fall time, you are thinking ahead, okay, next year, getting a crew together and that sort of thing, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Some other history, that's 110 years for that. 1898, Will Kellogg invented cornflakes. That was like really one of the earliest cereals, and I think it was an accident when he created
this,
if you remember, right?
Yeah.
So it goes back to the late 19th century. Seventh-day Adventists began to develop a new food to adhere to the vegetarian diet recommended by the church, and members of the group experimented with a number of different grains, including wheat, oats, rice, barley, and corn. In 1894, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, superintendent of the Battle Creek Sanitarium in Michigan, and an Adventist, used these recipes as part of a strict regimen, which also included no alcohol, no tobacco, no. How would you survive a no alcohol, tobacco, or caffeine in this country?
Caffeine right in front of me.
Yeah. This idea for cornflakes began by accident when Kellogg's and his younger brother, Will Kellogg, left some cooked wheat to sit while they attended to some pressing matters at the sanitarium. When they returned, they found that the wheat had gone stale. But being on the strict budget, and they decided to continue to process it by forcing it through the rollers to flatten it, hoping to obtain long sheets of it, like doughy sheets of it, and they let it dry. And what they found instead, once they ran it through the roller, were these crunchy flakes. And this was in 1894, and then they patented really the very next year and took it to the public.
What was the name of the movie where the Kellogg people? Roger, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I was just thinking of it when Dave was talking about it, and I remember it was because they were on such a health kick that the cornflakes was not really what they were into. It was like an extra side thing, but it was a cleansing place that they really very strict cleansing, body cleansing issues.
It was a place where you took the cure, as they used to say.
Yeah.
How about a classic cornflakes commercial?
Glad you stopped by for breakfast, Jimmy. Oh, excuse me a moment, will you?
Ooh, it's Superman.
Hey, Mr. Kent, you're out of Kellogg's cornflakes.
Look at the cupboard. There's a spare package.
That's awesome. Early
50s. You mean there was a spare package?
So that's where
you
got
to start picking up another one. Because we got to get to the office. There's no time. Who do you think I am? Superman?
No. No, I don't think that.
Out of Kellogg's cornflakes. Fine host he is.
Even if Superman did deliver Kellogg's cornflakes, he'd have a tough time keeping everybody happy. More people run out of them every morning than any other cereal. Because Kellogg's cornflakes taste best to more people. Always have, still do. Don't run out at your house. Remember, anytime.
Great to have Superman as your spokesman.
How about that?
The Road to Wellville.
That's
was the name of the movie.
And that was about the Kellogg family?
Yes.
It was about the
Santa.
The Road to Wellville. What year was it?
1994. Comedy drama. Film adaptation of a novel of the same name. Tells the story of the doctor and clean living advocate John Harvey Kellogg and his methods.
I didn't know that was a recent
employed
movie.
At the Battle Creek Sanitarium.
Road to Wellville. Thank you.
Road
Thank
to Wellville. Mm-hmm. All right. My favorite cartoon character was... debuted in 1940. It is Bugs Bunny. That's really to me, that's the Ray Rayner theme, by the way.
Sure.
Even though it's Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
It was
because he played the cartoons.
Also.
Well, and it was his theme, too.
Yeah. Also, the little music that was used in Blazing Saddles with the Candygram from Mongo.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
Candygram.
It was a.
Candygram from Mongo.
It was a Merry Melodies animated short film. That was Tom.
Just keep playing it.
And I'm going to keep doing it. July 27, 1940, Wild Hair was the first official Bugs Bunny Park cartoon. The title
is a play on wild hair, the first of many puns between hair, H-A-R-E, and hair, H-A-I-R. He's unnamed in the film.
And he doesn't look then like he looks now.
No, he doesn't. No, yeah.
The rabbit had no name?
No, he didn't. And neither did Elmer Fudd. He didn't look like himself either.
No,
it was a different Elmer Fudd.
The first one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
look
at that.
How things evolve. The early Popeye stuff was very different from the later ones.
And, of course, Mel Blanc did all those great voices.
The one and only.
Here's a short clip of Mel Blanc on David Letterman, which I loved when he was on that show because David actually really did revere, you know, some of the actors and comedians from the past, and have Mel Blanc on there was pretty cool. He was the voice of so many. Let's take a listen.
How do you go about creating a voice? Do you get a voice and then say, draw something to go along with this, or do they come to you and say...
They show me a picture of the character, and then they say, they show me a storyboard, which shows what the character is going to do in the cartoon. From this, I have to create the voice. Like Bugs, they said, was a tough little stinker. So I thought, which is the toughest voice in this country, the Brooklyn or the Bronx?
So you put the two of them together. That's how I got the voice for Bugs, Doc.
Isn't that great?
And I love that. You know how long he did the voice?
Oh, till his
death. 49 years.
Wow. Wow. And then I think his son took it over, I guess, for some shorts and stuff.
Yeah.
You could tell in the when they were doing some TV specials that Bugs didn't quite... He was sounding not older, but a little slower in his cadence and so forth. But still,
he also did Barney Rubble.
Yes, he did. One of the Barney Rubbles.
Yeah.
And he, on Saturday mornings, my son's still, you know, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, which I'm okay with because I need a nap at night on Saturday nights. He comes, you know, crawling into bed and, Dad, can we watch Looney Tunes? So, I mean, most kids don't know what Saturday morning cartoons are anymore.
I know.
Because there isn't on any of the networks or anything. That is a thing of the past. But the fact that he comes in there, I know they're on from like 5 to 7 a.m., so I DVR them every Friday night, Saturday morning, so that when he gets in there, we can
watch
it.
So you can watch him.
Absolutely.
Oh,
and I'll watch at least an hour with him. I mean, we'll hang out. At some point, my laptop will open up, but yeah, we watch a little Bugs Bunny. 1900. You remember this, Roger. The hamburger was created by Louis Lansing in Connecticut. Louis' Lunch advertises itself as the first restaurant to serve hamburgers. And as being the oldest hamburger restaurant still operating in the U.S. as a small lunch wagon. It opened in 1895. It was also one of the first places in the U.S. to serve steak sandwiches. According to Louis,
it wasn't a hamburger until I told him to get a couple of pieces of bread and put it in between.
You were a smart man. You're a very smart man. 1957, Jack Parr's Tonight Show premieres. He was the second host of the Tonight Show, first being
Steve Allen.
Steve Allen, that's right. In 1954, let's listen to Jack, a little Jack Parr's Tonight Show.
This guy called his wife from his office, and she said, "Darling, I'm in the bathtub, and I'm standing here shivering. I'm in the nude, and let me finish the bath, and I'll call you back in 10 minutes." So the guy ran to his friend, who knew the girl, in his office. He said, "Call my wife right away," and he gave the setup. So the friend called, and there he gets her. He says, "Hello, Helen. This is Mort." "Helen, good grief, you're naked."
That's awesome. I love that. and he quit the Tonight Show famously, of course, too.
Yeah.
He walked away from it. Had enough. 1965, President Lyndon B. Johnson signs a bill requiring cigarette makers to print health warnings on cigarette packages. He was a big smoker, Lyndon Johnson.
Well, yeah, a number of heart attacks.
Later.
Everybody was back then.
I mean, I still remember going over to my grandparents' house for a sleepover and coming home smelling like my mother would have to wash my clothes. I'd have to take a shower.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It was True Blues that he smoked.
True Blues.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? They stopped making it years ago, but I went to, I think it was in North Carolina, and there was like this massive warehouse of cigarette and cigar place. And they had it was like almost like a warehouse, and they still had a case of True Blues.
So I
bought them and gave them to all my cousins because in honor of Grandpa.
Yeah, I think they used a plastic filter.
They might have
on the True Blues. I'm remembering these.
I remember the shape of the filter because it was in all the
printed plastic filters.
Yeah. A couple of them did, and it depended on the cut of it. Like some had a square, some had a triangle on the end.
Right.
Both my parents smoked.
Oh, yeah.
One smoked Winston's. The other smoked Marlboro.
Yes.
And for many, many, many years, they would smoke. And then Dad had his heart attack and had to stop. This was back in the mid to late 60s. And then Mom, I think, stopped shortly thereafter.
We are passing out to the kids in their goodie bags some Spider-Man stuff for mm-hmm. my son's birthday party, his sixth birthday. We're also putting candy cigarettes in other packs to please their parents.
Well, you make sure that you get them out of your candy cigarette machine.
I do have a candy. I have a 1970 cigarette machine.
Yeah,
spent a lot of money in that machine.
but parents are really always shocked that those still exist. And I gave him the bubblegum ones so that when you blow on it, the smoke comes out.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love those.
I love promoting that with the children. Here's a classic cigarette commercial.
You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls,
doctors love cigarettes.
You'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out for many men of medicine usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette. And because they know what a pleasure it is to smoke a mild, good-tasting cigarette, they're particular about the brand they choose. In a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other
That's
cigarette.
My favorite. More doctors smoke Camels, for God's sake.
And this was before Camels were making cigarettes with filters on them.
Yeah. Oh, can you believe that?
Oh.
Yeah. Most doctors prefer Camels. 75, Teamster President Jimmy Hoffa disappeared in suburban Detroit. 88, the last U.S. Playboy Club closed this week. It was in Lansing, Michigan in 1988. And my favorite to wrap it up, 1990, Zsa Zsa Gabor began a 3-day jail sentence when she slapped a cop. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
There's also one story I wanted to mention. The Brady Bunch house. Have you seen this week? Is up
for sale. It's for sale. How much are they asking?
$1.8 million.
Wow.
Now, the house has been in the same possession of the family that had it in 1973 while the Brady Bunch was still on the air. They bought it for $61,000. And they owned it from September. Well, no, the series ran from September 69 to March of 74. But it is one of the most visited houses in that neighborhood. And believe it or not, one block east, because I've been there, in Studio City is the Cunningham House.
Oh, my gosh. The good way.
So that street, that corridor.
Oh, from Happy Days.
Yeah, from Children of the 70s and 80s and the 60s. Totally love these houses, but it's pretty cool. $1.8 million. You can have this house, Dave.
Get right on it, Dave.
I don't know if I can get a loan for that.